Okay, we're going to have open lines for you now for the next couple hours here on Coast to Coast AM, plus two separate topic hotlines, one each hour, along with whatever you call us about. So we will do that. We'll be heading back for Los Angeles this weekend. I've got to do an interview when I'm there, too, with an Italian magazine that they want to do a full story on Coast to Coast. Apparently, this program is beginning to catch the ears of a lot of people in Europe now, and they are just fascinated with the subject matter. And more importantly, they are fascinated with the fact that you have the right to call in. And I guess they're not used to that over there in so many countries, but that's what we're going to do. So I'll be doing that interview with the Italian magazine, part three, year three of Ancient Aliens. Will be starting on the air, I believe, in another month and a half or so. I'll get the exact date from Giorgio Tsoukalos. I'll pass that on to you as well. Here's tonight's topic, our hotline for this hour. And again, with open lines, you call and chat about things you want to, too. But this hotline number, 818-817-0021, is reserved only for this topic, even though you can call on any line you want. 818-817-0021. Back in 1807 to 1892, there was an American writer. He lived. His name was John Greenleaf Whittier. He came up with probably one of the greatest quotations I have ever read. I keep it in my office in L.A. It's pinned right to my cork board up there. And some of you know it, of course. "For all sad words of tongue and pen, the saddest are these, it might have been." I'm sure you know what that means. It might have been. So that's our topic for this hour. What things might have been in your life? Things that you could have changed, for example. I mean, that tragedy of the guy in Texas reaches over to catch a ball, and now he's dead. If only it might have been. 818-817-0021. That's the topic line for this hour. We'll have a new topic next hour. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, let's take a ride on this Coast to Coast roller coaster tonight. We'll pick it up by going to our first-time caller, Michael, in Des Moines, Iowa. You're up with us. Hey, Michael, good morning. Michael, you there?
Hello. Yeah.
There you are.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Is this George?
Yes, it sure is. Loud and in person.
Hey, it's nice to talk to you. I wanted to kind of ask you about, you know, pretty much all the really smart people believe that, you know, there's got to be life out there, but aliens and stuff like that. Do you believe that that maybe they're still amongst us?
I'm not so sure, Michael, if they're here now. But I do believe that we've been visited in the past. We are continuing to get visited. I'm not sure they're intermingling with us or anything like that. Mingling around.
What do you think their technology is like?
Oh my gosh!
It's got to be maybe 30 years ahead of us. I mean, if we're still doing this, I mean, this computer thing has really jumped up our technology big time.
It could be millions of years ahead of us, billions of years ahead of us. They've learned how to travel. Simple as that. They've learned how to travel in space. They are not getting here with our current propulsion system. They bend things. You know, again, what I do is you take a piece of paper right here, put two dots on each end of the paper, fold it over where the dots hit each other. That's exactly how they're traveling. They have created the ability to travel through space with connections of wormholes from one point to another instantaneously. It's impossible for them to travel anywhere near conventional propulsion systems that we have right now. Let's go to Kendall. Denver, Colorado. Welcome to Coast, Kendall. Go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hi.
Hi. Hi, everyone. I just wanted to let you know that some of you have called in with your experiences about extraterrestrials and things like that. I just want to let you know, I have them too, and I believe you. And I also want to say, okay, this might sound a little strange to you, but there are a lot of us out there who are incarnated Pleiadians and Sirians. or reptilians. And we want disclosure to happen as soon as possible. It is the most important thing for humanity. It really is. I know that sometimes it might sound a little delusional, but it really isn't. The situation on this earth, on this planet, is beyond ridiculous. And we have been lied to for thousands of years. They have, you know, these, there are people in the government who keep you in the dark, and they don't want you to know about the truth. And I promise you that we will have disclosure, okay?
I hope you're right, Kendall. I tell you what, though, it's not going to come from governments. It's going to come from some fluke, to be sure. Don't forget our hotline here. It might have been things that might have been in your life. What would that have been if you were able to change that? 818-817-0021. Next couple days, by the way, a coronal mass ejection flare is going to hit the planet. They don't say it's going to be a big one. It's not going to disrupt satellites or anything like that, but it is heading this way and should hit another day and a half, 2 days from now. Let's go to John in North Dakota. Welcome to the show, John. Thanks for calling.
Hey, George. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, it's probably been in the news, obviously, about Minot, about the flooding.
Oh, yeah. Sad story.
Yeah. You know, my grandparents, they lost their house, and they finally went there today, and it's a disaster.
How long did they live there, John? Almost all their lives?
You know what the funny thing was? July 4th was 39 years ago where they moved in.
39 years. And this is obviously the worst it's ever been there, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they lived through the 69 flood,
yeah,
which wasn't that house. But it never got quite to that house. But it's just, you know, they considered a 500-year flood.
Well, the same thing happened to St. Louis in 93, and they said the same thing, a 500-year flood. You know, and the ironic part about that date, 500 years, what it also means is even though you just had that flood now, the next one doesn't mean it's going to be in 500 years. It could be within 500 years. You could get another one next year.
Yeah, and you know, we had levees, and most of the homes in Minot, we didn't have flood insurance because they told us we'll never flood again. And for 30-some years, we never had a flood.
So why spend the insurance, right?
Yeah, and out of like 12,000, I think there was like 5,000 homes, only like 300 had flood insurance.
So what are your grandparents going to do?
Well, they're living in their camper. So they actually are going to be heading down to Las Vegas for the winter. That's what they do because, you know, the winters up there are horrible.
Okay, so they do that anyway.
Yeah, so they're going to hire somebody, you know, to fix up their house. But they've already ripped a lot of stuff out of their house, the floors, sheetrock. It's all got to be tore out.
So they're going to rebuild? They're going to rebuild there?
Yep, they're going to rebuild it. It's just, you know, I think about 800 homes right now, I guess, they said that have to be completely demolished.
Yeah, it's not easy. Joplin, no, Missouri, wiped out with a tornado. I mean, this has been a rough season this year.
You know, when the day that the levees were gonna, they told everybody to evacuate. There's a website. A buddy of mine back home, he put it up on. It's called RadioReference.com. Live scanner feeds throughout the world, and Minot's one of them. It was the number one scanner feed in the world. People were listening to it when the sirens blew, when they told everybody to evacuate. And you could hear the police and fire just, you know, tell them, you know, you could just hear all the traffic, just, you know, backed up traffic for hours at a time on the bypass.
How about you? What are you going to do? Was your home department touched?
See, my mom and, you know, my stepdad, we moved from the valley up to the South Hill many years ago.
You lucked out there.
Yeah, so it's, you know, we actually seen our house on NBC, our old house, which is underwater.
It's a weird feeling, isn't it, John?
It's just, you know, unless it happens to you, you don't realize it, you know, and it's, we got a movie star, obviously, out of Minot, Josh Duhamel.
Yeah.
He's really, pushing it. My cousin or my uncle went to high school with Josh. And, we just got to get the word out, make donations to the Minot Red Cross. They need it,
Yeah,
they do. It's really sad.
You're getting much help from the federal government?
Yeah, FEMA's there. National Guard. Obviously, people just got to realize, stay out of that area. The first night when the evacuation was in order, they told nobody to be there.
What about looting? Anything like that going on?
No, not really. There's just a lot of people that just wanted to, curious what's going on. And, they just got to, listen to the cops, National Guard. They're at checkpoints.
Well, I'll tell you what, John.
They had a heavy rain today.
Oh, I know. It continues to rain. It doesn't stop. The flooding continues. And, as you well know, rivers rise days after it rains. It doesn't just load up on the day it rains. So it's going to get even higher and higher and higher. But, John, keep us updated on that situation. And that's one of the tremendous luxuries of this program, is because we are in so many cities and so many markets that if anything happens, we are one of the first to find out about it. So definitely keep us abreast of things. Let's go out to Florida. Carol is on the It Might Have Been hotline. Hey, Carol, go ahead.
Yes, my name is Carol from Citra, Florida. Mm-hmm. I'm calling about my son, Adam. He was diagnosed with schizophrenia at 15 years old. Right before that, he was voted one of the 10 super kids in his school of over 300. These were children who were voted upon by all the teachers, who applied themselves the most, were the most popular, and knew how to have fun, but never by hurting other children. He was also the center of his basketball team at that time. When we would be places with him and he would see a handicapped child, he would turn to me with tears in his eyes and say, "Mommy, poor little guy." When he was first diagnosed with schizophrenia, he told me, as I stood by his bed and read to him, we went through 7 different medications. Oh. He has now passed away because of the complications of his medication. He passed away a year and a half ago. I'm writing a book about him and the signs he gives me every week. And when he first became ill, he said, "Perhaps it should be me who is sick, Mommy, because I've had such a happy life." I get signs from him all the time. One night I was listening to your show, and his favorite song, "Somewhere Over the Rainbow" by Iz, came on.
We're playing that again tonight, by the way.
Wonderful. I can't wait to hear it. And then in the morning, my husband had put on one of his favorite movies, and it's called Finding Forrester with Sean Connery.
Oh,
and
sure.
At the end, "Somewhere Over the Rainbow" came on.
Yeah.
And then we were on the way to Kissimmee, Florida, to a friend's house. They were having a small birthday party for my husband, and we saw the most beautiful rainbow you could ever imagine.
I wonder who was behind that, right?
That's right. That's right. Exactly. I crossed him. He had the medication he was on was called clozapine. It brought him back to be a happy, wonderful human being, all giving and loving that he was. However, he knew his limitations. He could still sink so many baskets. He could, and even in the hospital, he sunk 19 out of 20 baskets from the foul line.
That's amazing. 19 out of 20?
That's right.
That's better than most NBA players could do, Carol.
That's right. That's right. And, but he knew. I said, try to get back on a team. And he said, "No, I have to play for fun because the medication makes me so tired."
Yeah, it was too much.
And I asked him once if he ever fell in love. And he said, "No, he never did. He stopped himself from falling in love." He said, "Now, When I would go to dances when he was 13, he was one of the only three boys ever dancing with the girls. He had a good ego. He respected girls. And he was one of the few three boys. Everybody else was standing along the wall. But he did tell me later in life that he had liked many girls, but he wanted to make something out of his life before he knew he was dealing with an illness, and he wanted to make something out of his life before he pulled somebody else into it. Every day he and I danced in the parlor for a half hour. We'd exercise together, and my husband would laugh and say, when you teach him to dance, it looks like Jenny and Forrest and Forrest Gump when you teach him to dance.
Carol, sounds like he had a lot of magic about himself.
He certainly did. He certainly did. He was a wonderful, wonderful human being. We had him 35 wonderful years. And like I said, I have been taking writing courses for years and writers clubs for years, and I am writing a book about him. It was his birthday. He would have been 37, June 29th, and I waited and waited for signs. Finally, they came. I met a lovely woman at a bank, and she was Christian and took me to her house and told me how when she almost died, Michael the Archangel appeared to her. And then later that night, I was taking in the clothes from the clothesline, and three white doves flew over me. And then the morning of his birthday, a big hawk surrounded me with its arms almost enfolding me. So I did get my signs. It's been a year and a half since he passed away. So at our bereaved parents, they're saying don't be alarmed if the signs come a little bit fewer and farther between. He's happy in heaven. But whenever you need him, he will be there. And I can attest to this. But the
you sound strong about this, Carol. Are you now?
Yes, I am. I miss him. The medication clozapine had made his teeth break in the front, and we had finally saved up to have them replaced with implants. And when he comes to me in my dreams, he's always wearing a bright white sweatshirt and jeans. Now, he never had a totally bright white sweatshirt. He had many bright white sweatshirts, but they had the New England Patriots on them or the Boston Celtics.
What? No Detroit teams?
Yes.
Okay. Hey, Carol, I'm coming up to the break here, so let me run, but I'm glad you're okay and you had that gift. And it sounds like the way you and your husband raised him helped a lot considerably, too. And I think that's so important. In any kind of situation, parental supervision is critical. If you don't think so, you're wrong. Believe me, I've seen it firsthand. You've got to have good parents behind you and those who care. And if you're able to pull yourself out of it without that, more power to you, but you got to have it. I'll be back in a moment. More open lines continue on Coast to Coast AM, plus the It Might Have Been hotline this hour only. 818-817-0021. And, of course, this hour, the It Might Have Been hotline, which is 818-817-0021. Hey, it's Friday night into Saturday morning, so it's time for our traditional shout-out and thanks for supporting Coast to Coast AM all around this planet. Those of you listening to your favorite radio stations across North America, thank you. And Coast Insiders, thank you as well. Don't forget our video chat. Tuesday night, by the way, we'll have more posted on the website. XM Talk 168, and then the various chat room and groups all over the place. Into Infinity, hello to you. Fantastic Forum 2, and that's with the number. Imaginative Worlds, National Radio Club, the Sorcery IRC groups, MySpace groups, the Facebook groups, our Twitter links, Yahoo Chat, Northern Kentucky Paranormal Group, Above Top Secret, SoCal UFO Meetup Group, the Hollywood Ghost Hunters, and our buddy Greg the Cook enjoying incredible weather in St. Louis tonight. Back in a moment with more open lines on Coast to Coast AM. Former First Lady Betty Ford died. Most of you know this by now. 93 years old. And she was a champion for a lot of causes. 93. What a great life, huh? Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Linwood, Washington to start. Sabrina the Witch with us. Hi, Sabrina. Welcome.
Hi, George.
How are you?
Well, I've called you before, but the thing is this. The first time I called you, you said that I sounded like I had a really, really deep voice. Like
yes, like Sylvia Brown.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I can account for that. But I was calling you because, number one, my son died 25 years ago at four months old.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, you know, people think that 25 years means that it's all gone away. They're wrong. I still feel it. I don't talk about it anymore, not really. When you brought it up on the line, I was thinking, maybe it's time to say something about it. But the other thing that I wanted to talk about is that people are always talking, you're talking about how people are getting weirder and weirder.
Yes, no doubt it. There's something strange out there.
Well, yeah, I agree. And I think I know what's going on.
What is it?
Well, what I think it is that since we're coming to that point in our galactic orbit, what's going to happen is that a lot of things are going to open up. And basically, it means that time of magic has come back. And people are not familiar with it. And of course, if you don't know what something is, of course, you're afraid of it, right?
But this feeling that I'm picking up, Sabrina, is a strange feeling because people just aren't acting normal. I mean, they seem to be uptight about things. Don't you feel that?
Yeah, I do. And when something isn't understood, it's feared. And it's like the uptight is because they're waiting for the other shoe to drop, and like it's going to hit them in the head. Isn't that right?
Yeah, that could be.
Yeah, I mean, I've talked to a lot of people that feel that way. And, you know, I just do what I can, you know.
Well, that's good. What's new in the world of witchcraft?
Well, what's new in the world of witchcraft is that we've known for a long time that things are going to shift, and it's not going to be any worse for the shift. It's actually going to be better for it. The shift is coming where people are again open to things like magic.
Well, that's a good thing. Sabrina, thanks for the call. Let's go to Houston. It's John's turn on Coast to Coast. Hey, John, thanks for holding. I think you're holding. Well, I guess he isn't. Sid is in Abilene, Texas. Hey, Sid, go ahead.
Hello, George.
Hi.
It's been a long time, but I listen to your show quite often.
Well, thank you, Sid.
I had a sighting back in 1962. It was in my room, and I was asleep one night, and I woke up for no reason at all. You know, I just woke up. I guess you probably had that. Happened even before, just wake up for no reason at all, and you're awake.
Yeah.
And I sit up in bed, and I looked over my brother. I was sleeping beside my brother. He was on the other side of me. And I looked over in the floor, and there's this object, and it was spinning around. It was spinning so fast, it looked like it was standing still. And it had these electric waves going through it, these currents. One would be going arching right, and then the next line would be arching left, and did that all the way to the bottom.
Looked like an electric octopus.
Well, it was. I tell you what it was shaped like. It was shaped like the capsule that they used to use and when it crashed down and splashed in the ocean. You know, the capsule, the way they were shaped, they were round and they got wider at the bottom.
Sure.
They kind of fanned out. That's the way this object looked. And I watched it for a long time. You know, I just sit there and watched it, trying to figure out what it was. I couldn't even figure out what it was, so I thought I was dreaming. So I laid back down, and I counted to 20. And then I sat back up in bed and looked over my brother again, and it was still there. And I was watching it, and then it started moving close, coming toward my bed. And it stopped right there at the edge of the bed where my brother was. And I was back up against the wall. My heart was beating like a 20-pound hammer. And I didn't know what to do, and I started shaking my brother, and he raised his head up, looked at it, and he lay back down, and he said he never did see nothing. And I watched it, and it started moving, kind of moved mechanically, like it was moving in triangles and stuff, different angles. And then it started an angle off toward the, I guess, toward the south, I guess it was.
What the heck was it, Sid? What do you think?
I don't know. I don't know what it was. I can't imagine what that thing was. But I watched it for a while and then went to the next room, adjacent room to this room, and my other two brothers were sleeping in there. And I watched it and went by the edge of their bed at their feet, and then it just went through the wall like it was nuts. I mean, just passed through the wall all the way through, just gone.
Did it look like it was controlled by something?
Yeah, it did look like it had some kind of control. It had to, because the way it moved.
See, I'm convinced they've got these probes, and they send them out, and they feed back information to them, and video and everything else. Let's go back to our Los Angeles studios now. I do believe Tom is there with a text message for us. Tom, what do you got?
Hey, George. Ron in Long Island, he texts, he says, what do you think being possessed is like? Does a person consciously know the evil is taking them over, or is it like they're trapped in their body and they can't get out?
I don't think they're aware that they are possessed. They just do these things. They probably think it's them, but they don't understand. You know, we know a lot of people who've been possessed, and we've seen it. And, you know, they get these dark eyes, and their face changes. They do this shape-shifting, and they really aren't acting right. I mean, they sound like the person, but it's weird. I think when somebody's possessed, they're taken over, but I'm not so sure the individual truly knows that they've been taken over.
Well, I heard you speaking earlier this week. We were talking to Robert Bruce, and you were talking about somebody you knew that changed. And I was thinking to myself, maybe that's a form of possession.
Oh, there's no doubt.
When people change like that.
No doubt at all. And in this particular case, drinking did it, as Robert Bruce was saying. But so be it. Anyways, get another text ready for me next hour, okay?
See you later.
Okay, next up we go to Gary in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Hey, Gary, welcome to the show.
Hey, George.
Hi.
Appreciate all that you do. I'm sitting out here on patrol, and I thought I'd call and talk to you a little bit.
All right. What's going on?
I am so tired. Right now, you know, everything is just hitting. And like you've been saying, everybody's just kind of weirding out, and I have to stop and think about all the good things that have happened in my life. And one of them I've been wanting to tell you about is Bubba, the guardian angel.
All right.
Back in May of 98, my ex and I were getting ready to go to bed, and she likes to lock things up and make sure everything's secure, so I let her do that. And she hollered at me and said, "Hey, somebody's outside." Well, the trailer we were in at the time had a tree line on one side, and there was a yard light on the other side. So I jumped up and I looked, and I got down on her level because she's about, I'm a little over 6 foot, and she's about 5 foot, and I'm like, "Ain't nobody out there." "Yeah, right there by that green tree." So he's about 8 foot tall, and he's got a sword. And I said, "Dear, that's just your guardian angel. Well, let's go to bed." And she's like, "Well, why can't you see it?" I said, "Because it's not for me. Normally, I'm the one who sees these things."
That's right.
And I knew why it was there. She had a bad heart valve. She was born with a bad heart valve, and now in her 30s, it was just getting to the point where it was just worn out.
Yeah, she needed to get it replaced.
Yeah, she really did. So from May until the end of August, every night I'd holler at her and I said, "Is he out there?" And she says, "Yes, he's there." And he stayed with her all that time. And then August, I had gotten a new job, and my insurance kicked in. Of course, the doctor wanted to see her right away because it had been a while.
Sure.
So we went in, and when you see panic on the doctor's face, you know something's up.
You know something's up. Absolutely.
Well, we went in for an echocardiogram, and Dr. Becky, she was like, what is going on here? And my ex couldn't explain it too well, and she looked over at me, and I said, "Well, part of the time she's tacky, and sometimes she's Brady. Sometimes, she's pink as all get out, and sometimes she's ash. And, her blood pressure was just going all over the place. And she's like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. So they said, well, you're going to go in first of the next week, and we're going to scope it. We're going to go up through the groin and take a picture of it.
Yeah.
And while she was on the table, they wanted to take her in right then.
But it was that bad.
It was that bad, but she was convinced that if she had the surgery, she was going to die. And she actually had it backwards. If she didn't,
if she didn't have it, she'd die. Exactly.
Well, to make a long story shorter, we did eventually, we did go in. And in about 2 weeks, we went in, and I'll never forget it. This little nun at the hospital, I had my little area over by the, in the waiting area there, and she came over, and Mr. So-and-so, and I'm like, well, I guess that's me today, because normally when they call me Mr., I usually tell them my dad's not here right now.
Yeah.
Oh, Sister Connie, 90-year-old little nun, about 4'6", and she looked at me and stuck her hand out and said, well, come on, sweetie. And we went off down the hallway, and we walked into the ICU, and there's a little short hallway, and you're looking at the nurse's station.
Yeah.
But we made a left-hand U-turn, and she said, now this is where your wife's going to be. And I'm like, oh, yeah, no big deal. I've done hospital security, EMS, And she got that with a bony finger up in my face. She said, you will stop at the door, sonny, and you will take it in. I'm like, yes, ma'am. So I went back and sat down, and they gave me updates and all that. First thing they told me to come in to go see my wife.
But sure.
She was out. I left the main hallway, went down that little short hallway there at the ICU, made that U-turn, and that door was open. It was probably a 10-foot opening there, but George, I took one look at her, and it was like I hit a brick wall.
It was like she had passed on, wasn't it?
Oh, I knew this was a Catholic hospital, but my Lord, they had a 2x12 underneath her shoulders and had her arms stretched out.
What did they give her a pig valve or something, Gary?
They gave her a St. Jude's valve.
What's that?
It's a permanent valve.
Artificial?
It's an artificial valve.
Okay.
It looks almost like I call it kind of like a trash can.
They give people a choice now, I guess, between an artificial and an animal valve. The animal valve, they say, has to be replaced every 10 years. The artificial one will last longer, but you got to be on medication for the rest of your life. Big deal,
yeah.
I guess. You know,
they gave her the option too, and said, "Well, because you're so young, we might as well just go ahead and put the St. Jude's valve in there."
Sure. So they won't have to cut her open again.
But it just startled me. I mean, she had tubes are going all over the place.
It's a frightening thing. I mean, you actually think they've passed on. It's so bad.
Yeah. Well, her eyes were opening, and she was like she was wincing and trying to talk to me. Her heart rate was like 125. I mean, it was just going 90 to nothing because it didn't have to work so hard. But when I came around and I hit that invisible wall there, I took a step back, I shook my head, and I looked, and I'm like, oh, Jesus. And when no more I said that, right there beside her bed was this 8-foot Roman soldier-looking dude with a long white robe, and cherubims carry their swords vertical. He had his horizontal, and he was just sitting there sweeping back and forth. It was like a bunch of little gnats and stuff over her body.
That was the angel, Gary, who was out there the first time a long, long time ago. Let's grab one more call if we can before the break, and then we'll come back with more open line calls. Spokane, Washington. Jim, what do you got for us?
Hey, George.
Hi.
I was wondering, have you ever heard the story of the black-eyed kids?
The Black Eyed Kids.
Yeah, I was going to, I think I was on Above Top Secret, you know, just trying to find things to scare myself with. And I found this story, but I guess like these different reports have been going out all over the world of, the basic scenario is like your doorbell will ring at like 11 o'clock at night or something like that.
Okay, you go to it, and then there's one of these black-eyed kids standing there?
Well, there'll be like, there's two of them all the time. And they'll be like these two kids, and they'll be, you know, kind of standing in the shadows, and you'll immediately, like, you know, get fearful and stuff.
Yeah.
And they make it a point that they try to get in your house for something. Like, they'll say they want to use the phone or, you know, something's in the backyard, and they want to go through your house. And,
Do they act like little kids?
Well, no, just preteens. They say okay. Black guys, you know, like old enough to, you know. You'd kind of think they're hoodlums, except for the...
But you're not sure.
Yeah. Anyway, I just thought I'd throw that out there.
What happens if you let them in the house?
You know, I don't think you're around to tell the story. I was thinking about that, too. I was like, no one's really let them in, but that might be a bad thing. You know what
that,
I mean?
Yeah, I would guess that would be a very bad thing indeed. Hey, by the way, on our whole week of shows for you, of course, we've got Ian Punnett tomorrow talking about the Forbidden Universe. John Wells on Sunday night with Stephen Quayle, our good old guest, Mr. Quayle. On Monday, Richard Wiseman joins us as we talk about his world of fortune-telling and ghosts. Should be a classic coast-to-coast show. We're going to be talking about forbidden cures on Tuesday, and then also a little bit of prophecy on Wednesday. I'll tell you a little bit more next week about the rest of the week. We'll be back in a moment. More open lines continue. So callers from Dallas, Seattle, Redding, California, Philadelphia, and Nevada City, just hang with us, plus the rest of you. Plus, I'll give you a new hotline in just a moment.